400,000.
But then you only need one.
Yeah. Yeah, well, then you're able to longer the risk.
You're right. You can go down and play.
Hello.
That is 6:30.
All right, why don't we call the meeting to order? Are there any citizen comments? All right, seeing none, I have no reports to any committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had that great meeting that the county executive set up for us over at the Job Center, and we got some really good reports out of that. There was, with the treasurer here, One thing that was really cool that I heard was that there's a project that the treasurer is working on with Pleasant Prairie on the tax deed parcels. Is that right?
We have a few different ones with a few municipalities, but Pleasant Prairie is probably the biggest one.
Is the Village of Summers on the list?
Well, they can be if they would like to.
Can I explore that with you?
Sure, definitely.
And then what would be my next step to do that?
Yeah, we just have to have a meeting first and decide how we want it to work out.
I mean, I would meet with you, but ultimately it would be between the county and then the village.
Yep.
But I have heard from several citizens about tax deed parcels where there's some interest. Mm-hmm. So I've just heard that. And since I heard it, I thought I would explore.
Yeah, whenever we get a call from a citizen, we always put a note in the parcel. So that will go on with it forever. We put a WHAM note on there that says who's interested and any contact information they give us. And that way, even if it never becomes a formal interaction with the municipality, the county clerk will always get that to bring to you guys when there's a sale potential on a property, that there are, you know, two or three interested parties already on the books for this parcel. And
so I will call you and set up a meeting, and then we'll see if the village wants to do that.
Sounds good.
All right, thank you. That's all I had.
All right, any other supervisors? Seeing none, the minutes before you, there's a motion and with a second.
Second.
Discussion or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's passed. Next item is the Dana Investment Report, and who is going to present that?
Both of us.
All right, Doug, thank you. And why don't you join us at the table and introduce yourself and
tell us
a little bit about you.
I'm Ellen Roberts. With me today is Matt Lewinsky. Matt is the portfolio manager for managing surplus funds for Kenosha County. I handle day-to-day relationship management kind of responsibilities, interfacing with the treasurer and finance team. We put together a presentation. I see folks have a copy there, and then we've got it there on the screen as well. We'll go through just a few of these slides and certainly answer any questions. We welcome questions. I wanted to start with page 3 and just give you kind of a basic outline of our firm. Dana is an employee-owned investment management company. That is the only work we do at Dana. We manage, we've got a portfolio management group that manages equities, and then we've got a portfolio management group that manages fixed income. And of course, the county is involved in our fixed income assets. All U.S. domiciled, no high risk, highfalutin, wild securities. We're a domestic manager. We have just under $7 billion in assets, and we're based in Brookfield, Wisconsin. So very happy to be based here in the state. And I would add as well that we've been enjoying this relationship working with Kenosha County since 1994. So again, coming up on almost 30 years here and working together, which is just wonderful. So that's just a little flavor of the type of work we do at Dana. Again, happy to answer additional questions. I can share we have 54 employees and 23 of us are shareholders of the firm. So with that, I'll turn it over to Matt. We've got some other slides specifically on the investments within Kenosha County. And again, we welcome conversation and questions, so let us know if we can help with anything.
We'll start on page four. And as Ellen said, as we go through this, you know, certainly stop me if you have questions. We'll start with kind of the highlights of the portfolio and the data that we use is as of the end of April. A couple of key points there on page four, your yield to worst on the portfolio, which is kind of worst case scenario yield, assuming securities were to their shortest lifespan or they got, you know, get called out at their shortest call date, is at 4.95%. So you're just under 5% on the portfolio. Your effective duration, which is just a term that we use for interest rate risk, is about 1.6, which is kind of the equivalent of like an 18-month CD, roughly, in terms of interest rate risk. And then credit quality is AAA. It's 100% agency and treasury securities, so we have no corporate bond exposure. It's all U.S. government-based securities. And then, you know, more importantly, on the bottom of page four on the right, you'll see the cash flow. We included that. You've got significant cash flow in the portfolio. Obviously, with this type of a portfolio, we've got a mandate that starts with preservation of principal. Liquidity is second, so we make sure we build a lot of liquidity into the portfolio in case the funds are needed at any point in time. And then the final piece is the yield of the portfolio. And you can see the three-year cash flow number there on the far right ends up at about $32.5 million. That's natural cash flow that comes in terms of interest payments and maturities that are available to either be reinvested by us, or if the county needs that cash flow, it certainly can be used for projects that the county has. So we've got a significant amount of liquidity in the portfolio in the upcoming years. And then the final point there, obviously, we monitor all of the investments for compliance with state statute as well as investment policy statement on a regular basis. Page five.
Before you move on, why is the cash flow dip from 25 to 26?
What ends up happening in the analysis, so it looks at your maturities, but it's also looking at these cash payments being reinvested. So over the life cycle of your maturities, 24, 25, 26, 27, et cetera, you have less coming back because it's assuming you took that money out. So if you reinvested the $9.4 million from, for example, from 2024, some of that would go to 2026 and provide additional cash flow. So those last 2 years are actually low, because they're assuming you're taking the cash away. So you've got a reinvestment rate that would be applied to those if you kept it invested.
So you have, it goes here from 14 to about 9?
Correct, yep. And some of that is, and the other piece that comes into play there is some of the money in the portfolio was American Rescue Fund money, and that has to be spent by 2026. So we have additional maturities ahead of time of that date, so you have liquidity available in 2024 and 2025.
So you're anticipating that almost $6 million is gone?
Potentially, yeah, yeah.
We monitor this and we meet with them regularly. We look at the cash flow, we look at the budget, and we determine what we project the needs of the county to be as these things mature. If the cash flow projections will see us, if our cash flow projections show that we'll not need to hold this money, then we allow him to reinvest it. But if it looks like, and as we get closer to the end of 24, we're going to have to start to pull some of this out because, as he said, we invested a significant part of the American Rescue Plan funds in there, and right now we've been able to manage within what we've been drawing down, but as we get to the end, we're going to deplete those funds and we're probably going to draw some
of this out. Anybody else on that? Yes.
Well, there are a couple things that I remember seeing. The general fund balance remained flat, so there wasn't a big infusion of money to flip out with the spend down of the ARPA money. But on the other side, we're getting some of the opioid money, so we might be able to flip some of that into it.
We might. Yes. Yes.
We've been meeting every 3 months pretty regularly and more often as needed. When we started to get more of the opioid money, some of it coming faster than we thought, so we could talk to Matt about if we think that we're coming up and we might need to flip some, we meet more regularly. Otherwise, we push it off a little while later. But it's generally Patty, Barna, and I meet with them generally every 3 months, but every once in a while, we're pulling an extra one in if we're getting nervous.
Yeah,
Yeah, make sure you have enough cash to pay the payroll and this and all that.
Top priority.
Yeah.
So this would be a question for both David and Patty. Just take the last 10 years, running 10 years. We have the funds that are available through this investment vehicle. They're available to us, to the county. Can you give us an idea, just approximately, what percentage we pull out and what percentage goes back in to be reinvested again? I mean, is there high and low points? Is it vary significantly from year to year? Is it fairly consistent? Can you just give us a thumbnail sketch on how that works?
We have not really pulled anything out since I have been involved in this. Our assets were much lower until we invested the American Rescue Plan funds. And like I said, we monitor this now.
Okay. So we've not had financial issues. David, in your tenure?
During my history, so let's say we buy an instrument like a, going back, we had Fannie Mae's and stuff like that, and then that thing would mature, and then we would flip it into another one, you know? So it's not like we would let that one die and dump it into the general cash. We wanted to try to optimize the interest as much as possible, and I'm hearing Patty's carrying the baton on that. Okay. So.
Recently, the only thing we have thrown out is briefly we did invest some of those larger bonds that we had over at Circuit Court. We briefly invested those while we could hold them while they were waiting for those court cases. So when we had a couple of $1 million bonds, we threw them in. And then, of course, when the bond needed to be paid back out, then we worked with Matt to pull that back out. So that's the only thing that really we talked about pulling out so far.
That's
but
right.
And we're getting to the point in the ARPA fund that we're probably going to have to start pulling some of it out.
Yeah, but Dave's point was a valid one. There are other sources of cash coming in that we might just reallocate it differently.
But if I understand correctly, the takeaway lesson is that we have this amount of money we can invest. We have our professionals that do the investing for us. But we're not to the point where we basically have to take that money, apply it for county purposes. We're pretty much rolling it over and making money off our money. Is my correct in my assumption?
We never had to liquidate at a loss.
Okay.
No.
Like, you know, or we didn't do the kind of thing where we liquidate at losses or gains. That's just not what we just naturally let the instruments work their way.
That concludes my question. Thank you.
All right, why don't you go ahead?
Yep. Page 5 has the performance information, and we break it down a couple different ways. The upper left is kind of the accounting activity, if you will, for the year-to-date period through the end of April. You've got both at market and cost. Obviously, as a county, you've got to market securities to market, so we keep that, but we do know some clients like to look at it on a cost basis value as well. Market value change year to date is just under $600,000, you can see on the value there. So you've got a significant gain so far in 2023. On the bottom of the page, that's broken down into a percentage basis. And we've got a couple different indices that we include there that are just kind of relative to the area of the market that you're invested in. 1 year treasury index and then a 1-3 government index. And you can see obviously April, latest month, has been positive. Year to date, you're just under 1.7% for total return for the year. In longer term periods, you've got 1 year and then a since inception number that's just under 3% annualized for nearly 30 years. So it's been a pretty significant pickup in, you know, investment rates for that long of a period. Obviously, there's different interest rate environments that we've gone through. Some are lower, some are higher like they are now. But overall, it's ended up being a pretty significant return on the money for a long period of time. So that works out really well. And then when we look at the far right, again, the characteristics, I've mentioned these earlier, the yield, the worst, the 4.95%, so around 5%. And you can see the comparative there is, you know, pretty significantly higher than 1 year treasury and over and above a 1-3 year government as well. Reinvested dollars at this point in time are well over 5%. So the money that can be rolled over into new investments, typically they're going to be 5.25% or higher in terms of interest rate yields right now. So we've got a pretty significant ability to get higher yielding investments in the portfolio in this market environment. And then again, effective duration is pretty conservative where it stands. The upper right is the allocation of the portfolio. And you can see you've got a pretty well diversified portfolio. The largest portion there is the agency bonds, which are about $22.5 million. that is the portion that is significantly higher than it had been in the past, because that's where most of the American Rescue Fund money was invested. So short-term agencies where we know that they're going to mature in time for the liquidity needs of the county. We've got a couple components there as well that provide liquidity. The Treasury bonds at just under $3.7 million are also short in maturity and part of that American Rescue Fund money. And then kind of the expertise that Dana's had for a long period of time has been adding exposure to adjustable rate securities into the portfolio as well. So the Small Business Administration bonds and the mortgage bonds, which are agency mortgages on the bottom two pieces there, those two are about $9 million of the investments, and all of those are floating rate coupons. So those securities float with the market. So as the Fed raised interest rates from zero last year to 5.25% right now, all of the coupons on those securities move up naturally with it. We don't have to go sell those securities to reinvest at higher rates. And I've got some charts later in the book I can kind of walk through how that works as well. So any questions on performance? I've got a couple slides on economy that I can get to as well.
This pie chart, agency bonds represent the majority, 61.4% of this pie chart. Can you just give us an example of what agency bonds are? I think you alluded to one, but what would be your top three, four, five agency bonds?
Absolutely. So if we turn to page 14 in the presentation, you'll see a list of all the securities that are held in the portfolio, and the agency bonds are right there towards the top. And so you can see kind of the distribution of how we do this in our holdings report. So we list them by maturity date. So you can see your first one, there's a Federal Farm Credit bond that has a maturity of July 24th of 2023. So that's the first maturity that comes off. Total value is $989,000. It will mature at $1 million. So you still have $11,000 in gains to come before it matures at par. And then kind of through there. So you can see there's a number of different issuers, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Home Loan Bank. We use kind of all of the different agencies, but they're in debt of those agencies that are pretty short.
So if I understand this pie chart correctly, these are all U.S.-based securities. It's not the federal government directly. It's a federal government agency or appendage of the federal government.
Correct.
So we're looking at all domestic investment. And if I understand your opening statement from the first page, it's entirely domestic management, being based in Brookfield, employed with your employees and your investors. Right?
Correct. Yep.
My question, thank you.
John.
So those bonds on page 14, so you bought those bonds at a discount when they were trading for less than full par, right?
So a lot of those we bought at par. We typically will buy them at new issue, or we'll structure the securities in some cases to make sure we have certain call dates to provide liquidity. Some of them we do buy at discounts. We typically don't, in the agency space, we typically don't buy them at a premium. That's the one thing we try to avoid. We obviously don't want to have a loss when we know that matures at par. But most of them are actually bought at par. Let's try to buy a new issue.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
How would a federal default affect this portfolio?
Like from the debt ceiling, you're kind of that direction? Yeah.
Yeah.
A default is kind of a catastrophic event for pretty much all fixed income securities. Certainly, treasury bonds and agency bonds would be affected by it. Generally, what happens in that environment is the credit rating on all these securities would drop from AAA, and it would be some sort of credit rating adjustment to them. The agencies themselves are separate from the treasury bonds, so the agencies could continue to pay because they're not under that debt ceiling. The treasury securities would be affected by it. The other side of that, though, is in scenarios where we've had government shutdowns, etc., a lot of times it becomes a risk-off trade in the market, meaning investors actually go buy higher quality securities. And while these might be a notch or two lower in credit rating, you're actually going to see people that buy those securities because now they're concerned about a recession being caused by it. So there's a few dynamics that come into play. Obviously, if we have a credit default situation at the U.S. Treasury, we're going to have a major market event. There's no question around that. And the likelihood of that is pretty low. I mean, there's really no upside for either side to do that.
Anyone else? Right.
So I've got just a few slides in here on kind of the outlook, and we can kind of certainly answer any questions you have. I'll just kind of hit on briefly some of the key things that we're looking at in the market right now, not only for how this portfolio will perform going forward, but also how we would like to continue to position it. The discussion points are on the left of page six there, and one of them we already hit on was certainly the debt ceiling issue. As I said, it's a low probability. It's not a zero probability that there becomes an issue, but you know, neither party wins if they default on the debt. It just becomes a negotiating tool, and we've seen this kind of every cycle for the last decade or so where it becomes a negotiating tool. You might have a government shutdown kind of scenario before people really come to the table and get serious about it. But a default hasn't happened since the 1700s, so it would be kind of a true shock to the market if we actually did that. So that is something we're obviously watching. The market, I can say at this point, has not reacted to any of the news about it. Yields haven't moved. The market hasn't reacted to this. They're really not taking it seriously that this would actually be something that would occur. The closer we get to that deadline, obviously, you might see a little bit more volatility coming to the market. Inflation is certainly something we're watching as well. And in this portfolio, because it's a government portfolio, most of what drives the performance is really what happens for the Federal Reserve. And they control the interest rate environment. Over the last 18 months, they've taken rates up, you know, 500 basis points, which is a significant mark-to-market change, but it's also a significant change to reinvestment rates, which is good for the county. We're seeing yields now that we haven't seen in 15 years. Which from a perspective of reinvesting dollars, that's a good thing. It provides higher interest income. Will these yields stay around? The question is, well, will inflation come down? And the Fed certainly is watching that. That's kind of the entire reason they moved rates up as quickly and as aggressively as they did. Inflation was kind of running away at near 10% and they wanted to address it. So we're watching that. And then the other side of it is the job market has been very, very healthy throughout this rate increase cycle that we saw in 2022. And the question that we're, and you probably hear it in the news a fair amount, is can we have this soft landing, which is essentially can the Fed keep rates at the level that they have without causing a recession? And a recession, it kind of comes through and you'll see it in the job market. If you have a lot of layoffs coming through, we're starting to see it in the tech sector certainly, but that can have an impact on their policy. If we go into a recessionary period, the Fed tends to cut rates to address that, and that's something that we're kind of watching carefully. Obviously, at these levels in terms of yield, we want to take advantage of it and keep dollars invested as long as possible, kind of lock those yields into the portfolio, because there is a potential that at this point the Fed's likely not to raise anymore, and the market's predicting that they may have to cut by 2024, and if they do that, yields come down, and so your reinvestment rate becomes a little bit lower than it is today. So we're watching all those things carefully. You know, at this point, I'd like to tell clients we kind of view this as a transitionary period because they've now basically hit their last rate increase in the first week of May, and it's really going to be data dependent. How does the economy react to that? How does inflation react to that? And from that point, it will really dictate what the Fed does going forward. I can certainly say that, you know, if you look at some of the charts we have here, and I'll get to that pretty quickly here, the market and the Fed are not in agreement as to what's going to happen with the economy. I'm going to jump to actually to page 8, because I've got another slide in here that kind of covers page 7. But page 8 gets to what I was talking about here in terms of the Fed funds rate and their policy. The black line through this chart is what the Fed funds rate has been over time. And as I said, the market and the Fed are not in agreement right now. And you see that on the very far right of that chart. The FOMC puts out what they call their dot plot, which is basically the median of all the Fed governors and their projections for rates going forward. And so we've got this blue dotted line here that shows what their projection is. And basically their projection is we're at the top of our cycle, we're at 5%, and we're going to start cutting rates back down to kind of 2.5% over the next 3 years. The market is the green dotted line, and that's calculated by looking at the Fed funds futures market, where actual investors are putting capital at risk. And they're basically saying, look, you've already gone too far, and we expect you to cut twice by the end of 2023, which would be a reduction of 0.5% from where we are now at 5%. So something's going to have to give, right? Either the Fed's going to be right or the market's going to be right, but at some point, those two lines have to come together as you move through time. So we'll see what happens. It's certainly going to be data dependent. There is going to be some volatility around some of the news we talked about, you know, the debt ceiling and some of those dates as they come up. That will cause some volatility and may correct either the Fed's view on what's going on or the market's view on what's going on. But we are kind of watching this because this is going to play in it, you know, a key role in how we position the portfolio going forward. if we get into a scenario where we expect a significant, you know, reduction in interest rates, we obviously want to use more fixed rate securities to lock in yields higher for longer. If we kind of stay at the current level that we're at, well, then we're not necessarily, you know, necessarily going to have to do that. We know that these adjustable rate securities aren't going to continue to play very well in this environment. And, you know, at this point, some of those offer over 6% yield. So we're trying to kind of maintain a good balance of fixed and adjustable rates, but we want to be cognizant of the fact that the environment's likely to change over the next 6 months or so. I did include a couple slides in here, page 9 and 10, address the adjustable rate components that I mentioned earlier. And 9 is the prime rate. And this is important because you do own about $1.5 million worth of Small Business Administration bonds, and they are all prime rate floaters. So essentially, as the Fed came out and said, we're going up 25 basis points, prime rate goes up 25 basis points the next day, all of your securities adjust by 25 basis points kind of thereafter. And so you essentially get from 3.25 kind of base rate that we had in 2022 to 8.25 now. And those are all one-to-one adjustments on those securities. So you more than doubled your interest income off of those holdings in a one-year time frame. So they certainly helped the portfolio in 2022, and that will continue to help us going forward because those levels of interest income are really, really high. Historically, obviously, you can see the chart there. It's as high as it's been in, you know, 10-plus years. Same thing on page 10. We included the LIBOR rate, and this rate is kind of the base rate for the agency mortgage securities that you own. And you can see it's kind of a similar shape, right? You go from 0.25% in late 2022 to about 5.5% now. That's, again, one-to-one kind of to what the Fed has done, and all of those securities in your portfolio are seeing those increases as well, which, again, is significant. As I said, we haven't seen rates like this in 15 years, and these securities have allowed us to take advantage of the significant increase in rates that we saw in the last year and a half. And then the final two pages I'll hit on, and I can certainly stop and answer any questions, are 11 and 12. And this is, you know, we include these because these are the Fed's mandate. Their dual mandate is inflation and unemployment. You can see on 11, you know, what they've done to the interest rate curve from not only the end of the 2020 period from COVID, but also to where we are in May 1st. Significantly higher, obviously, across the board, depending on where you are. It can certainly be a little bit higher than others. But more importantly, I think, is when you look at the shape of that blue line, what they've done in their process of addressing inflation is they've caused a inverted yield curve, which means short-term interest rates are higher than long-term interest rates. That historically has been a precursor to a recession, and the reason would be that totally flips the banks upside down, right? If I have to borrow at the Fed for 5% and I can only give somebody a mortgage for 4%, as a bank I lose 1%, so it kind of stops credit from flowing in the economy. It's kind of the intention of slowing the economy down, slowing inflation down, but it can't be sustained forever. And so we're kind of at that point now where we're seeing some signs, certainly when you look at the yield curve, that the Fed has at least reached the point where they probably need to hold, so they are doing the right thing. But now it becomes the next step of what kind of reaction does the market have and the economy have to that. So, and certainly when you look at kind of in the regional bank crisis we saw in March, a lot of that was due to this change in interest rates. When we saw an inverted yield curve and 5% higher rates, bank portfolios, some of the smaller banks struggled because they didn't manage their risk properly. And so that's why we saw a couple smaller banks go bankrupt in early March. So the Fed has certainly had an impact on that. When we look at their mandate, you know, again, I said inflation and unemployment is kind of their view. 12 has the employment picture, and I think this is important because this is really the key reason why the Fed wants to stay at the levels they're at. Employment is really, really strong right now. Unemployment rate's at 3.5%. It's through full employment, and the Fed would like to see that kind of creep up a little bit, if you will, because that relieves the wage pressures that cause inflation. But unfortunately, when we look at the data that's coming through, you would want to see less job growth on a monthly basis than we are seeing right now. We're generally getting 200,000 plus non-farm payroll growth per month. That's more than what you'd see in a normal economy. And a lot of that is just a recovery from COVID, really. We've got a lot of segments of the economy, hospitality and leisure, hotels, airlines, that are all hiring back because they had to shut down in 2020 and 2021. And so that's caused a lot of job growth, a lot of wage pressure. That correspondingly with the fact that we had a shutdown in the supply chain really caused runaway inflation. And that's what you see on page 13. That's the final chart here. You can see inflation, the blue line peaked near 10% on CPI in kind of mid-2022. It's now down around 5%, but that is still more than double the Fed's target of 2%, so they have a ways to go. So from their standpoint, they've been very, very aggressive what they've done in the last year, because they knew we can't go back to 1970s style inflation where it's double digits. That's unsustainable for an economy, so they addressed it very quickly and very aggressively, but they're not at their target, and they're not seeing the signs in the labor market that would help offset kind of that last 2 or 3% they need to see it come down. So as I said, we're going to be data dependent. We're watching what the Fed's doing. If their message changes, obviously that's something we're going to take into account as we position the portfolios. But you know, the broad message overall for the portfolios, you've had very, very good performance for, you know, the last 30 years roughly. You're in one of the best markets we've seen, certainly since I've been at Dana for 15 plus years, with in terms of yields that we can put in the portfolio now. So the future, at least for the near to intermediate term, looks very, very good for the portfolio. And I guess I'll stop there and see if there are any other questions.
Questions, comments, David?
This isn't your bailiwick, but I want to ask anyway. Mm-hmm. It's really important to the county what happens with property values, and I know we invest in some agencies and others that are affected by values too. So mm-hmm. Do you have any view of where property values are going?
Yeah, so you know, I'll kind of answer that in two parts. So broadly, property values are going to slowly start coming down. And the reason we're already starting to see it kind of in localities that are a little bit higher priced throughout, you know, the country, whether it's, you know, East Coast, West Coast, areas where you typically have higher property values, they're more sensitive to change. They're coming down because interest rates have caused mortgages to go from, you know, 3.5% on a 30-year fix to now 6.5 to 7. So that monthly payment's significantly higher than it was 3 years ago. So you're seeing less refinancing and certainly seeing purchase prices come down kind of broadly. It will continue to come down as long as interest rates are as high as they are, because there's an affordability factor that becomes an issue. And then the other side of that is, obviously, the banks are tightening credit, and so if you can't go get a mortgage because the bank doesn't see a value to their balance sheet by offering that mortgage, so they can't make money on it, it's going to slow property growth and homeowners, and so you're going to have a drop in value. In terms of the portfolio and how it affects the portfolio, it's actually a positive to this portfolio because it slows your prepayment rates on all of those mortgages.
Right.
So the refinancing was really, really high in 2020 when rates were super low, and that made us, you know, get our cash back faster than we'd ideally want, because you're not earning your coupon then. Now they've completely dropped off a cliff because people can't refinance as quickly as they used to. And so we're earning these higher coupons that are adjusting higher for longer because they're not getting paid back as quickly. So the dynamic is good for the investments, but broadly it is going to start coming down.
Thanks. Anyone else? All right, thank you very much.
Yeah. I just want Bill's question kind of hit at the key point that drove us to have the meeting today, and I think it's good for us to regularly have a meeting with our investment advisor. But we were talking about SVB Bank and the big losses they had because there's a run on the bank, mm-hmm. and that really isn't our situation at all. We have a very conservative AAA rated portfolio, and we don't have to go into that liquidating of our assets in order to meet cash flow needs. That's the way this thing was structured. It's still working that way today, right? So that kind of was what drove you being here today.
And just to follow up on that comment, I'm most pleased to see that we're dealing with a Wisconsin-based organization, local, that a good portion of the employees are actually investors in the corporation, and that these assets we're looking at, I mean, it's very conservative, you know, we're not looking for a lot of flash and bells and whistles in this portfolio. We're looking for good, solid dependability and liquidity if we need it, if I understand this correctly, it's entirely U.S.-based. We're not investing in any foreign entities.
Nope.
Yeah. I think that's very commendable, and I'm pleased with that.
Well, thank you for inviting us.
All right, thank you.
Happy to come again.
We'll invite you.
Thank you very much.
All right, we'll move on to the next item, which is 7, Public Works, a resolution to accept a grant from the Economic Development Corporation of $200,000.
Yes, thank you. This is a resolution to apply for and accept a grant from the WEDC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, for $200,000, which will be used to finance a portion of the new human services building. In order for our application to be formally accepted by WEDC, they need to know that our committees here have approved us applying for this grant. So,
discussion? Someone want to move? Make a motion?
Move.
Yes.
Second.
Discussion?
One question is this in the tier of grants where we would split it with the developer? The answer is yes.
Yes, sorry.
That's okay. I just got it on tape. That's all right.
Anyone else? All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes.
Thank you very much.
Next item is a lease for the Parks Director to apply for a grant for Pike River improvements.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very similar to Jim Cuffer's, we have ongoing efforts with our Pike River restoration. We were successful with phases 1 and 2 within Petrifying Springs Park. This year is filled with grant opportunities to hopefully secure grant funding to offset any bonded debt for our ongoing efforts for Pike River Phase 3. The grant in front of you is from the Wisconsin Department of DNR. And it's requesting also a grant resolution for us to apply. If we are awarded, we have to come back to the county board, finance, in order to review and accept the grant award. So this one's just to apply for a targeted runoff management grant. Total grant would be for $225,000 for you.
All right, discussion. Yeah, here.
What is the match for this?
It's a 70%, 30% of the $225,000, not of the whole entire project of $3.1 million.
So we're 30?
30% us, okay. Kenosha County.
Anyone else? No?
So in the resolution here, Matt, it says this is for pets. Is this for Petrifying Springs specifically, or when Phase 3 gets going, is that over onto the Parkside area? How are we?
This is exclusively within Petrifying Springs okay. Park. It goes right up to our property line.
Okay.
John.
So the whole project would be $3.1 million, and we would get $225,000. So it's almost $3 million total, and we're going to have to bond for this thing. And at the current price of bonding, I'm not really sure that I want to stick my neck out for that, you know.
To clarify, this is one of the, I want to estimate, 8 to 10 grants we are going after. Some of them we do not have to go to committee in order to apply for those grants. When we receive them, we have to go to a committee to receive approval through a budget modification. So this is not just the only one we're going after. So to clarify, I think we have approximately $3 million in grants that we've applied for currently for Pike River Phase 3 restoration. Can I promise that we're going to get all of them? Absolutely not. They're very competitive. But some of them exclusively, especially the DNR, want to make sure that our county board and committees know that we're applying. But again, this is just to apply. If we find that we are not successful and I only come back with one grant, that's not going to cut it. And I know it would not cut it for leveraging that much. Phases 1 and Phases 2, we were very successful. Phase 2, we had over $1 million in grants that were not through the county bonded debt. So it's promising. We hope to leverage more grants, and this is one of the many we're going for.
All right, further discussion?
Motion to approve. Did you have a question?
I would second.
All right. Well, is there further discussion?
So yes. On the I think I'm hearing that of the $3 million, significantly less might, or we might borrow significantly less than the $3 million.
My personal goal is $1 million in grants to put this forward.
$2 million of bonding, $3 million of, okay.
Correct.
Anyone else? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, very good. We'll pass around. And then the next item is the number 9, authorizing the sale of Highway F property.
I will take this one as well, Mr. Chairman. Sure. So, as many members of the committee know, we had a major realignment of County Highway F a few years ago within the Twin Lakes, Randall, Wheatland area. And a large component of that realignment was not only due to traffic safety, but also it really was advantageous for the western development of Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park. So before you is, I'm going to call it cleanup from all of our multiple phases of the Highway F realignment, because there are 4 remnant parcels that are tied to the Highway F project as well as the park expansion. So I would ask the members of the committee to kind of use this as far as one of the attachments, and maybe it could be on the screen as well. This is Exhibit A within your package that defines parcels A, B, C, and D. These are the 4 remnant parcels that basically divided the new County Highway F that you can see within your packet and on the screen, that are limited value to Kenosha County that we would like to put back onto the tax roll again. All 4 of these parcels already have a memorandum of understanding with property owners that are contiguous to these parcels, and we would seek first right of refusal for each 4 of those properties. This resolution was already passed through Public Works, and what we need is permission through the county board in order to negotiate with these property owners with those 4 parcels in order to come back to you with the final price point to sell these lots back to those property owners.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'm thinking of making a motion to defer this to the next meeting, but before I make that motion and seek a second, I wanted to hear more and allow the committee to have more time to ask questions on this. But I also wanted to give Matt time to get through his presentation, and possibly are we adding a 5th parcel to this? Are we still with just the 4 parcels?
It's just to the 4 of my knowledge.
All right, good. So, but before I make that motion, I'd like to let Matt complete his presentation.
So, with the presentation, one point to make is 2 of the parcels are tied to Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park that we purchased with stewardship funding through the DNR. If we do sell these 2 parcels, parcel A and then parcel D on the attached map, those parcels do have stewardship ties to them, that anytime that you remove that from the park or considered parkland, you do have to have a conversion. That conversion is twofold. You have to convert existing or purchased property that would be considered parkland if you do have that offset of selling those 2 parcels. And then the second is the monetary gain from the sale of those parcels have to stay within parkland. So that was already put into the resolution in front of us. And we do have those parcels identified, and they are currently owned by Kenosha County, so there will be no additional fee structure needed. They're already used for park purposes. There's 3 parcels total that amount in that acreage of what we would like to sell off. 2 of the parcels are within Petrifying Springs Park that we purchased when we took ownership of 2 remnant parcels within Petrifying Springs Park, and they would just be considered truly parkland, even though they're already for park use. And the other one is a remnant parcel on County Highway W, which was right off of the Fox River that we already use for a non-motorized boat launch and fishing access. So that would be considered parkland as well. So that that would be the strings tied to parcels A and parcel D if we do sell that.
Parcel A and D?
Parcel A and parcel D.
D is in David.
Correct. So with that, in the other exhibits, there is a good overview sheet for the committee to review, as well as the appraisals that we have received from the Pitts Brothers. I can go through that, or I could see if there's questions before I go any further to see if it's warranted at this time.
Why don't you just run through the values that's
absolutely
stated, just list them, you don't have to give a reason.
So parcel A with the value that's 0.56 acres for that one. Pitts Brothers have a value, market value of $5,600. Parcel B is 5.77 acres, and that it has a parcel value of $190,400. Parcel C is 3.06 acres with a value of $153,000. And then the last parcel D is 3.27 acres with a value of $153,700.
Anything else from anyone? Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we're allowed to be informal, is it okay to have a discussion before there's a motion on the table so we would know what that motion is for? So, so we have four parcels that are worth $503,400 according to the appraisal, if I understand that right. And of those four parcels, A is worth $5,600, appraised at $5,600 by Pitts, and D is appraised at $153,700 by Pitts. And then B is, now B and C are not part of the, they were purchased with these strings attached.
That is correct.
Grant. So those, that's free and clear, owned by the county. We can do anything with that money, right?
Correct.
So we don't have to put that back in the parkland.
It was noted within a previous budget resolution.
Right. But that's county. It's not the grant.
It is county. You are correct.
But these other two, there's strings attached to those.
They yes.
To be, even though we're flipping land out, they still keep those strings.
Correct. The DNR.
So that's a condition of. So not just do we dedicate the same amount of land or more land, they still make us have those strings attached on that property.
We asked a specific question, the DNR, and that was a response, yeah.
Okay. Would there be value in researching that so we know definitively whether we have more flexibility with this money versus just the DNR Q&A?
That was a response. I don't know how much more research we could do other than what directly, because
so that's my question, and possibly also to council.
I think that the administrative code has provisions that require what's being requested by the DNR. In addition to the, I think the application and or the paperwork that I saw that came from, I think from the, was it the DNR or there was other additional in the application. I think for that grant that I think those requirements were made clear.
So
they can be looked at further.
But I'd appreciate that, because it seems that if we're flipping it out to this other property, maybe there's some relief there.
Loophole.
Sorry, I tried avoiding that.
Sure, we're informal.
I thought that was gonna come
we're
out.
We're informal,
right?
David.
I didn't use the legal term
sure.
Loophole. But so, if we could get a little more research, so as a committee, as a finance committee, we know a little more what kind of flexibility we have. And if there is really, if that's it, then that's it, I get it. But also these other two parcels, it is free and clear. It wasn't purchased with bonding because it has some other strings. So then we could take that into consideration. So that's one question, that if we could get another 30 days here, you could review it a bit and then bring it back to us at our June meeting. So that was one question I had. The second question I had was the language on the three resolution, the three provisions at the end of the resolution that are the controlling language, and they really don't say that you have to bring the sale back to the board. Now I know the county policies require that you bring the sale back to the board. This says that you have to bring it back for pricing, which is typical. I mean, I remember the old days where this committee used to drive around and look at tax deed property, and we would set the values with the assessor when we had county assessing. So But that's historically, we still do set pricing, and I think Pitts is a fine appraiser, so that, but this committee can then make the call on setting the pricing. But in addition to setting the pricing, we also have to approve the sale when you ultimately approve the sale, and this doesn't say that. So it would give us time to send it back and have it redrafted so it was clearly in conformity with county policy, not only setting the pricing, but approving the sale. So those were two things that I thought would be good. And then a third piece is to allow this committee to give consideration to previous budget language as to whether it wants that money to go to parkland or to the general fund or some other purpose. So it would give this committee flexibility to consider that. I'm not saying this looks great to me. This whole process looks really good, a way to resolve and address the way to handle these parcels. And the way that you've done it with the property owners seems really fair. There's four parcels that affect six owners. Is that correct? We own four parcels that affect six parcels owned by six other residents.
Approximately, there's some on the new cul-de-sacs with Carroll and Pond Road that we create as part of our IGA. So there are some property owners that do abut those parcels that we currently own, yes.
Is it more than six?
Well.
I'd like to know that, too.
One, two, three, four, five. I just counted on that map.
Okay.
So it's on the exhibit in front of you. Is how
so we have six MOUs. Right.
There's a second right of refusal as well. And the last, just for the packet of information, directly did not pertain to this in front of you. It was with the cul-de-sac by Five Star. So that was a separate MOU that was already dealt with.
Right. So with those questions that I had, I think I know enough now that I would like to give us a little more time on this and to have the administration go back and do some more research. So I'm prepared to make a motion to postpone till the June meeting.
All right. Do you have a second?
Second.
Right. Discussion? Bill?
Through the chair, in terms of what we're doing here, do you see any significant impediment to delaying this 30 days?
No. If the committee would like more time to review that, I respect that decision. So it's just part of this ongoing process. We've been at this for decades, I feel like. So what's another 30 days? That's perfectly
That's
fine.
That's the way it seemed to me. Let's get it right after.
Whatever the committee sees appropriate.
Further discussion.
So then I would like you to restate, if you would, I think you had a top three that you wanted to see included in the deferral for a future meeting. Would you restate those top
three? Those were my three.
Yeah.
One was the controlling language, make it more clear that it abides by county policy with definitive language that says not only must we set the pricing prior to any sale, but we must also approve the sale. So that's one.
When you say we approve the sale, you're saying the county board as a whole?
The county board approves the sale. There's language in the controlling language there that says that we authorize the administration to sign documents. That's a little ambiguous. Signing documents authorizes sales. I have signed documents that authorize sales, so it's a little ambiguous. So that concerned me a bit. So that's one. The second one was getting really good clarity as to whether that really does happen to us, that we actually agree to swap one parcel for another, yet we're still bound by those grant requirements on the money. That doesn't seem equitable to me, but it might be the way the grant is. So if that's the way it is, it's just inequitable. But
so it's the DNR piece of it.
Yeah, that's the DNR piece.
Yeah.
And then Matt, what was my third piece?
You were mentioning the adjacent property owners was your question, but I don't know if I answered that one or not.
Yeah, you did answer that one. So
the last one was consideration to prior budget resolution language.
So if you're right, so if we get that first piece answered and we learn that we maybe are more free and clear, then the committee would have the flexibility to learn whether the whole $503,000 could go to parkland or be used for some other purpose. So those were my three questions. And the committee may have additional questions. That was just a
Okay. Any further on the motion to postpone until June? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. We'll bring it up next month, then we'll see that.
Thank you.
All right, we're at number 10, a motion to modify the Division of Aging, etc. budget to create a new position, community prevention education specialist.
Good evening. I'm Heather Vanoss, and I'm the manager of Elder and Disability Services for the Division of Aging and Disability and Behavioral Health. We are looking to add a community prevention and education specialist. This was voted on and recommended by the opioid settlement panel. This would be a full-time position, and it would be fully funded by the opioid settlement money. Some of the goals of this position would be to improve access and resources to our community related to substance use. Focus will be on developing and implementing an evidence-based prevention program in all Kenosha County schools to expand on what DARE and law enforcement programs already have in place. And then once the program is implemented, there will be program oversight, troubleshooting, and program evaluation with continued monitoring. So we're looking for approval to add this position.
And how much is it?
$60,000
a year. Discussion?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I would move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Does this then expire when the money is done?
This is not a grant, this is a settlement. So it doesn't follow that grant language. And the settlement is for at least 18 years. So,
okay,
so
let somebody else work.
Maybe for you.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I think I'll be here.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah. Dave will be here. So. Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, if you're recognizing me.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. This looks like a great policy for the county, but I wanted to ask in the documents, I didn't see the budget mod form signed by administration, by finance. I just want to be sure it's supported by finance and reviewed and supported by finance.
The ones that just got added.
No worries, I just want to be sure finance is good with this. And then my second is I didn't see an administrative proposal form, and I want to be sure it's supported by the county executive. Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That I yield.
Further discussion?
Can you explain further what the thought is, what this person is actually going to do?
So there's a.
That would be great.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you.
So some key points that Carrie Foss, because I'm taking place for Carrie Foss today. She had wrote down, research existing school-based prevention programs to determine best fit with best outcomes for our community. Implement substance use prevention programs. Initial focus will be on middle school and high school based on reports from schools, in particular Wilmot School District. Future planning will be younger students. Research grant opportunities and apply for grants that match. Report to opioid settlement panel monthly. Develop a resource guide for parents, students with local resources. Serve as a resource for students, parents struggling with getting assistance. Collaborate with opioid task force, DARE officers, and school resource officers. Monitor outcomes, barriers, and successes, and assist in community outreach related to substance abuse.
So, because obviously I haven't had a chance to read this.
Yes, those are just some key points.
This is specifically to help for a person to be an assistant liaison, whatever you want the term, to help schools implement opioid or drug prevention programs at in the grade school and high school levels? Is that what this person's job is?
Primarily schools, but it also gets into businesses.
Okay.
And community organizations. It's a full community outreach.
Okay, and it's for education to teach the students, and then if they're going into businesses, to teach those businesses how to implement the programs, or to actually teach the programs?
To help develop,
okay,
and implement programs at both the school level and in the business community level. So as we know, this is not a specific demographic that's affected by this. It's every age level throughout the community. So this person is researching programs, helping to develop programs, implementing, monitoring, and then, of course, being that frontline person to interact with those school systems, handle complaints, issues, those kinds of things.
What do they this position foresee, or how are they going to, what are they going to do into businesses? Because I understand the school part. How are they? What's the plan for businesses?
So what is education?
Okay.
Education about substance abuse, that helps bring the issue forward, makes people aware of risk factors, signs, those types of things.
And is this something where this person will let these businesses know that this is available, and it will be we'd love to learn more, and we'd love to work with you? Is that the plan, to let them know that this is available, and then if the businesses are interested, then they would reach back out and say, hey, how do we work right. this together? Okay.
Right, that's my understanding. So to help make the community aware that this is available, but then actually, if there's interest, to help implement and bring that education, that information to those entities.
Okay, and this is under the behavioral health manager, so it's not the health department, it's behavioral health. Is
right.
that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Aging, disability, and behavioral health services.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion? Yeah,
I was just going to make a comment. It was the desire of the administration to expedite this resolution, so permission was requested from the chair of Human Services Committee so that it could come to finance
first,
and then to Human Services. And with that expedited time frame, that explains a little bit of the deviation from not having the admin proposal form and not having the signatures on the watch.
And when is they hope to hire someone?
Yeah, so if it would be approved at the next Human Services Committee, then it would go to that first county board meeting in June. So then the hope would be that to have somebody on board by July.
Okay.
So that they can be up and running by the beginning of the school.
Okay.
Yeah. Further discussion? All right, ready to vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, very good. Thank you. We have number 11, a modification to the budget for independent living support pilot.
Me again.
All right.
So we are super excited about this pilot program. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services has an independent living support pilot program. It's a 25-month pilot program. They're using ARPA funds, so it will run from March 1st, 2023 through March 31st of 2025. The pilot program will allow us to provide supports and services to elder and adults with disabilities to stay independent, safe, and healthy in their home and the community longer, with relieving some of the caregiver stress. We would be able to be really creative and think outside of the box to provide in-home supports and services. So each participant would receive up to $7,200 within a 12-month period. Kenosha County was one of 12 grants or awards for this pilot program. We were awarded $432,000 within the 25-month period, so that would allow us to hire two case managers to provide services and supports to 500 slots within that period and time frame. For qualifications for this pilot program, you have to be 18 or older. If you're under the age of 55, you have to have a qualifying disability or diagnosis. You have to be at or below 300% of the federal poverty level. You cannot be in any long-term care Medicaid program or long-term care facility. And then you just have to have one need of the daily activities of daily living. So we don't have to verify any of the income. They just attest to their income. There's no asset limit. The functional screen is very, very condensed. It's not complicated. And then for the services and supports, that's all being done by a fiscal agent called Premier. So Kenosha County will not be responsible for making any of the payments to services or in-home supports. And this would not, this will be fully funded with the pilot grant.
So is this $432,000, is that for payroll and all that kind of stuff?
Yep, it's just to provide for the salaries.
For staffing.
Yep, staffing, supplies.
And so you said it's for $7,200 a person?
Per person. And we have 500 slots for Kenosha County.
And so where, what's paying, how is the $7,200 getting paid?
Sure, it's through ARPA funding through the state. So that's separate monies.
This is ARPA funding also, the $432,000?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so it's just divided up.
Yep, so the $36 million is just going to be in benefits from DHS.
Okay.
And that's going to be all funneled through the fiscal agents.
Okay, and so is this, this is to help with independent,
independent living.
Yes, independent living.
Mm-hmm.
So is that similar to, give some examples of what,
sure,
what your ideas are for,
mm-hmm,
this program.
So we can be as flexible as we want. So we can do home or vehicle modifications, we can do housekeeping, respite care, caregiving, education and training. We can do whatever it is to meet the needs to help the individual stay safe and independent in their home.
It sounds a lot, or is it similar to the IRIS program?
Yes, so actually Premier is an IRIS,
yes,
agent. So it works the same, but you can't be in a long, we're trying to.
This is to reach people that aren't in IRIS?
Yes, correct.
So it's the people that probably possibly are a higher income that don't fall into IRIS or something like that.
Correct, yes.
So it's another level of care. So if they're in IRIS, they cannot benefit from this because,
yes, they can't be in a long-term care program,
okay,
or in a long-term care facility.
Okay,
correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So you said home mods are coming, so like ramps for,
definitely,
people with wheelchairs?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Okay, thank you.
And then the great thing about this is if we do the one-time payment for up to $7,200, that slot opens up for someone else. So we can have up to 500 filled slots at one time.
Anyone else here?
Yes, Dave.
So this doesn't flow through our books. It's not a budget amendment.
It is a budget amendment.
Oh.
Unfortunately, the budget amendment was not attached to the resolution.
Okay.
The current year anticipated expenditure and revenue would be $175,273.
And you're good with this and county's expedited. So
the final one, I'll go to the county board. We'll have that attached.
It's the same thing. We're expediting this one. Oh, okay, good. Thank you. That I yield.
Aaron.
So when you say 500 slots, is that like total over the however many years or 500 per year?
No,
you said when someone hits that 7,200, then they're out of the slot and you can put someone new in there. So
correct.
So how does that work?
We can do enrollment starting July 10th.
Okay.
From July 10th up into March of 24, we can enroll people during that time and they have 12 months from their enrollment date. So let's say they do a home modification and it costs over $7,200. We would give them the fiscal agent would pay out the $7,200. We would disenroll them from the program and now that's an open slot that someone else could utilize.
I'm still not understanding. So 500 slots, that's how many participants you can have at one time?
At one time, correct.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay, got you. So it's not 500 for the entire time.
Nope.
It's 500 at one time. Once someone falls out because they maxed out,
mm-hmm,
then a new person can.
Or they may not need it anymore.
Right.
Then
okay,
someone else can fill that slot.
Okay, so you'll be, these people will be working with possibly up to 500 people at one time.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Is this aimed strictly at elderly, or could youth be in this too?
So it can be 18 or older, but if you're 18 to 55, you have to have a qualifying diagnosis, and we don't know the language on that yet. The state hasn't clarified that specifically, but yes, so someone from 18 to 55, if they have a diagnosis, they could utilize this pilot program.
So this could be, for example, somebody exiting a juvenile court, probation, about to graduate from high school.
If they meet the definition of their qualifying diagnosis.
Right, exactly.
Yep, yeah. Correct.
So a qualifying diagnosis could be like MS, where they could need some help, not necessarily a wheelchair, but some aids.
Correct, yeah, and they haven't, again, clarified it specifically, what that language looks like, but more than likely, yes.
All right, Dave.
I would move approval.
John?
Is there any COVID funds involved in this?
It's all ARPA funding.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Was there a second to
second.
All right. Further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
So this will take 2/3 at the board.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item is the special assignment wages, number 12.
Good evening.
We are seeking approval to offer special assignment wages to our sworn supervisors. This memo may look familiar to those of you who have served on this committee in the past. We've asked for this regularly. So these are special assignment wages for sworn supervisors in the rank of sergeants and lieutenants who accept shift assignments outside of their salaried responsibilities for special events. Country Thunder being the most significant one, the Amazon Fulfillment Center traffic control, or other special events which are funded by the event organizer. This year we are asking to add to this provision captains and the food services manager for Country Thunder only. And again, these additional wages would be funded through the event organizer and not coming from the county.
Discussion. Bill?
So how many individuals would this compromise potentially? Sergeant, lieutenant, captains, and food service number? Potentially, oh.
30
potential. That's all.
All right, Dave.
I would move approval.
Second.
Second.
We did this last year and before.
We've done, yes.
Yeah.
What's the reason behind adding the captains and the food services manager?
So,
sure.
So, Country Thunder, as the committee is all aware, is getting more trying every year for staffing. The oversight by the captain in the past has been they would flex their hours. So, in the sheriff's opinion, is when we flex our captains, they're not here, right? So this gives them the opportunity to continue to work the hours at Country Thunder, but get compensated so they can still be here on an operational basis. The food service manager is been vacated by Dave Lineau, and now is Shannon Filer. So they provide our food service. He would provide our food service on an overtime compensation. So then again, he's not flexing his time. There's no conflict in kitchen services. There's not any gaps in service for just daily operations.
And I'll just correct one word.
Sure.
Special assignment, not
overtime. Thank you.
So when they would flex their time, it actually was costing the county the dollars. Is that correct? Or
no, because, I mean,
would Country Thunder reimburse us for their hours?
Their operational hours, right, which is billed an administrative fee.
Okay.
Right? Not necessarily hour for hour.
Okay.
So definitely they were not getting, the county's not getting compensated for their time.
That's what I meant.
Outside of an 8-hour day.
Right.
Which they're out there 12 to 16 hours a day.
Okay.
All right, anything else? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Passes. This does go to the county board?
It does not.
And that's true with the next item as well, those special wages for corrections officers.
Correct.
Admissions. All right, go ahead.
So on this memo, we're seeking approval for special assignment wages to corrections supervisors and admissions release supervisors who accept shift assignments outside of their salaried responsibilities. The intent here is that rather than forcing hourly employees overtime shifts, if we do have overtime shifts that need filling and there are no hourly employees that want to take those, the supervisory staff would have the option and would get this additional pay to help relieve that.
Have we ever done this in the past?
Yes, we've done this every year since I've been.
Okay, move approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Bill? Second question.
Yes.
So this involves KCDC and pretrial?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Pretty much exclusively?
Yes.
Okay.
Exclusively.
Okay. Yeah, it's just corrections.
All right, that's it. All right, anyone else? Let's vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Passes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Audit of bills, I believe that's made.
I got
it. Okay, very good. Any discussion on the audit of bills?
I did have one question on item here. And that is Tremplo County. What do we contract, what do they do for us? And I'll give you the line item here in just a second if I can find it.
This report doesn't have as much detail. I'm thinking that it probably has to do with mental health needs, but
It can be brought back in the future. I don't need an answer right this evening. I'd just like to know for future reference.
Yeah, you're right. And inmates,
inmate
housing, or mental health.
So do we transport from here to Tremplo County and then back?
Yes.
That's a fair height.
Sure.
So you just maybe follow up and
double
check. It sounds like it's having to do with mental health. But.
That's right.
All right. Any other discussion on the audits of bills? All right, then we'll move on. Do you have anything, Clark, on human resources report?
I do.
All right.
So I'm here to report to the committee that we are moving to a reclassification of one position. This is a lateral classification, so it does not require any budget modification, but as policy requires, we give notice to the Finance Administration Committee. This is a currently a lieutenant in the Sheriff's Department who serves as detentions administrator. We're going to be moving that to a civilian position. So again, it's a lateral in terms of budget, but we wanted to make you aware that it would become a civilian position and would be a position that's listed on our wage schedule. So that position would be titled jail administrator and filled by a civilian rather than a sworn.
Discussion?
Go ahead, I defer to David.
I mean, back in the day, we had a House of Corrections and we hired a civilian to run the House of Corrections. I remember his name, Bill Trapp. And then we changed, I think two chapters in my book are about it, but which will never get published. But I.
So, More exciting, Jesse.
Yeah, they are. But so, what are we doing here? I mean, what's...
So the idea is that our detention staff... yes.
Sure. He's coming up at the table now.
The idea is that it would be a detention's subject matter expert, if you will. So someone who has grown up, had their career in detentions, knows detentions well, would move into that role and lead from that perspective, as opposed to a lieutenant who maybe came up through operations, never worked in detentions. We just want that continuity of education and expertise.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The institutional knowledge for running these facilities comes from within those four walls, whichever building it is. We're starting on a pretrial facility with, I don't want to call it a pilot program, but, you know, our overall goal, the sheriff and I, is to make both of those facilities run by facility administrators that have been mentored in a succession planned all the way up through the ranks. When we have to put somebody over there historically from the sworn side, it's not the most popular job. And not saying that they all of them go over kicking and screaming, but for the most part, it's not the most coveted job. Just because that's not what, when we become law enforcement officers, is not necessarily what we sign up for, is to run a jail facility. Even though you've heard me say many times in committee meetings and everywhere else that we've talked, is that it's one of the most difficult jobs.
Yeah.
But in the reality is that when that lieutenant that comes over from the sworn side, that person's learning curve is 3 to 5 years, you know, and we're just not being effective with our personnel. And I think it gives them growth within the detention facility. They top out at a sergeant right now, so there's not a lot. They don't have a lot to work for. So I think just gives another career path.
Well, this seems like a really good plan. And so you can do this and still be a jail then, right? You can still have the civilian. I mean, we have civilian jailers, right, or civilian correction officers. We can have civilians in leadership. So this,
and there would still be a sworn captain that runs the division.
All right. So I yield.
Okay. Josh.
So is this caused by a shortage of sworn officers then, or just?
Just a change in administration and philosophy. This is something that has been a topic of many conversations since I was in the jail in 2016 to 2019. Again, you know, even the captains that go over there, like I was in there for just 3 years, like going on my third year, and I get moved in administration, right? So in that third year, I was just comfortable in my own skin to continue to make changes and to effectuate, you know, a positive work environment, and then you get moved. So this is just for some more continuity in just the operation in general.
And this was an idea from the new sheriff, or was it bannered around before?
So this goes all the way back to Chuck Smith. Chuck Smith he wanted this, and the old sheriff just was never on his radar. So yeah, it was something that the sheriff and I had talked about even when he was campaigning. And you know, just listening to those that work in the facilities, this is something that they would prefer. Not necessarily because they don't want to answer to a lieutenant, but they just have somewhere else to go.
And I'll just add, we're actually going to time this with a retirement of a lieutenant, so it's not going to displace
it. All right, anyone else here?
So this gives flexibility to who is in that position?
I guess...
Who can be in that position?
It does give us flexibility.
Because is it correct that right now... You basically, it has to be this level, it has to be a lieutenant or a sergeant, or?
It has to be a lieutenant.
Okay, it has to be a lieutenant now. So if someone is a lieutenant, is there, and wants to climb the ranks, then they automatically, if they're not a lieutenant, then they're not in that position.
Correct.
You have, so a sergeant can't be in that position.
Correct.
So it limits who can be in that position because of the rank. And this, because there will be no rank, it's a civilian position, then it gives flexibility of whoever can get it. Is that correct?
They're still going to need to have supervisor experience in the institution. I mean, we're planning on doing this through in-house. You know, obviously we don't have anyone that's interested. We'd have to then shift gears and go outside, but that would defeat the purpose.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Question. So the proposal that's here is to have one position, and this jail administrator would oversee both facilities, KCDC and pretrial?
No, just pretrial. Yeah.
Just pretrial. Mm-hmm. Only pretrial.
Yeah. Okay. And our plan is within, I would say, a five-year plan is to then transition that other lieutenant to a facility administrator, a civilian facility administrator within 5 years.
So the idea is it comes from someone within the ranks, mm-hmm. a sworn officer. A non-sworn officer is going to be the end product for the jail administrator. But it comes from the ranks of sworn officers, or comes from the outside?
It'll come from inside civilian staff.
So it's basically a promotion of civilian staff. A jailer can actually ascend to the rank of jail administrator.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So that's where from the ranks comes from. I got you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Question answered. Thank you.
Anything else? And you're not seeking committee approval?
No, it was informational.
Okay.
Yeah. Just wanted to mention a piece of information that was in your packet. At the request of the county executive, we'll share on a quarterly basis our exit survey results. So we send exit surveys to all departing employees, and we capture the information from those responses, and they're put together in this dashboard, and you have a copy of that in your packet if you like a printed one.
It's got nice colors. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, one county employee ex-county employee I know of said they never received an exit survey, and they were wanting one. So how would they go about getting one?
Well, they would have received it in their onboarding package.
They didn't. But,
okay. They, well, if you have a name, I can give that person a survey, certainly.
I can talk to you afterwards.
Sure. We do not share these with involuntary separations.
Oh, these are only for voluntary separations.
Mm-hmm. No, this was voluntary.
So what's the rationale for that?
Because we meet with folks that we involuntarily separate with, and it's a different
dynamic.
You still do a survey, just not this one.
Correct.
Yeah.
Minus a billion.
Yeah.
I understand the pictures.
Reason for leaving would be.
We know the reason for leaving.
Yes.
All right. Anything else?
No, that was it.
All right, thank you. And your fund balance report is next month?
We do that. It's starting in July.
Okay. Any other reports? Nothing. Any other business?
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, we're adjourned.